Hello, welcome everyone to another interview. I'm today here with Jared Dugvillo. He is running for Branch 1 Circuit Court Judge here in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Jared, thanks so much for taking some time out to come talk to us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me and everybody else. You know, this is all about education and empowerment through education, so it's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Thanks. I appreciate that. So, this is an interesting year, you know, going through all of the interviews that I've done. It's been, at least for me, very educational. I imagine for a lot of other people, it's been very educational as well.
Right.
So before we get too far into everything, how about you just give us a little rundown of yourself, your history maybe in Kenosha growing up and stuff, and what got you into the position that you're in. You're a commissioner, correct?
Right. Okay. Right. So like I know you met and interviewed Commissioner Pfeiffer, who's a family court commissioner here. Mm-hmm. I do similar work, but a little bit different. We can get into that, but out in Walworth County.
Okay.
So, but about myself, I'm born and raised here at the old St. Cat's Hospital that's no longer there.
Okay.
Over on Sheridan Road, that's where I was born.
Me too. Nice.
All right, yeah. Lived here my whole life. This has been home. With my daughters now, it's five generations that my family's been in Kenosha. So grew up, my parents, they still live over on the south side, just a couple blocks away from the spot.
Okay.
So grew up playing on Gravenhill Playgrounds and Lincoln Park as well, hanging out over there. Went to St. Mary's grade school, that's where my mom went to school. Then went to St. Joe's for high school, that's where both of my parents went. Then after that, went to Marquette up in Milwaukee. Stayed close to home though, continued to work here on the weekends and whatnot, so I was always back home. Mm-hmm. Then after that, I went to law school down in Chicago, still stayed pretty close to home. Mm-hmm. Once I got done with that, came back up here and got licensed up here and started working in Racine right away. Knew that kind of work I wanted to do, so I did that. But again, stayed here, never moved up there, always stayed in Kenosha. Worked up there for a number of years as a prosecutor, then got an opportunity to go out to Walworth as a commissioner in 2016, and I've been out there since, but still live here in Kenosha. Live on the north side now I'm a north sider.
Oh, nice.
Born and raised a south sider, had to switch to being a north sider, you know, people have their little things about that.
I'm a north sider, so all right. I mean, I like it.
All right, yeah, no, we love where we're at, so my wife, Ashley, and then two little girls who are 2.5 and 8 months old.
Oh, wow.
So.
Oh, congrats.
Yeah, thanks. So that's, you know, just the real basic rundown of myself. Like I said, five generations now. My great-grandfather came here after he finished in World War I, settled here in, it was like 1920. You know the Kenosha Pops concert band?
Mm-hmm.
So he was the first bandmaster for that band. Mm-hmm. And then my grandfather, who also, he was a Marine, served in World War II. Mm-hmm. He stayed in Kenosha, worked at AMC as a plant worker, mm-hmm. worked there his whole life. And then my father, who was in the Army himself, he stayed here in Kenosha and worked at Snap-on.
Mm-hmm.
So just a couple blocks away from our house, rode his bike to work most days.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked there until they closed the factory.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still, my parents are still here. So, and then, and yeah, so it was good enough for the four generations, you know, before me, or three generations before me, you know, it's hard to argue with that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always been Kenosha. Kenosha's been part of my DNA. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So I haven't had the opportunity necessarily to bring my passion for what I do for work back to the community, but that's what this is about. And this is about me doing what I love to do, impacting communities, but doing it in my own community and doing my own backyard. So that's what I'm hoping to do, and that's why I'm running.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. And it's cool to hear just, you know, so many generations of, you know, Kenosha. And you embracing that and
writing
it, and you know, especially growing up in the community, I'm sure you know your peers growing up were like, "Man, I just want to get out of here."
Sort
of like,
right?
You know, and it's like that's another thing, kind of why I stayed here. You know, my grandmother moved here as well, and she moved here in the '70s, and just for work. She moved from the South, and the community just was, you know, just so embracing, you know. And then growing up, I felt the same way, and that's why I've never left. So right. It's cool to hear other people's stories that, you know, even though you may work sometimes out of the community, that you still want to stay grounded in the community.
Just absolutely. You love it. Absolutely. It's hard to get away, you know, and when you grow up and you're younger, you're like, man, I'm going to get out of here. I can't wait. But then, like, when push comes to shove, it's like, well, what am I going to find somewhere else that I can't find here? Like, this is an amazing place, you know, from Wheatland to the waterfront, you know, Kenosha, you can't go wrong. So that's why I want to stay here. You know, I tell people my first job was here in Kenosha. I was actually a busboy at House of Gerhardt's.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So that was my first job, and I want my last job to be here too. So hopefully, you know, if I'm able to get this and people of Kenosha select me for this, then that'll be my last job too. So that's the idea.
That's amazing. So what got you into law in general? Was it something that you always wanted to do, or is that, you know, something that maybe later in life you decided to take that path?
You know, it was something that was always kind of an interest to me. It's one of my uncle, I got a lot of family that lives in the area too. I got an uncle and aunt that live just a few blocks away. He would always quiz me on everything, be like, well, why this, why that? And it was always just asking questions. So I always started asking questions, and it just kind of naturally fit. When I got into college, it was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. What am I going to study? What makes sense? You know, I took some economic courses, did not do very well in that. Took like advertising class. It was like, okay, this isn't for me. You know what? Let's study political science and criminology. Like, this is an interest to me. Okay. Hit those classes. All right. This is it. This makes sense. And then from there, it was just a natural progression to go to law school. And, you know, it's part of what my family has always instilled in me is service. Always do stuff for your community. Do stuff for others. Do stuff for your brothers and sisters. And that's always been part of volunteering, doing those types of things. So going to law school, it's like, well, what are you going to do? You know, it made sense to go into public service. That's why my entire career as an attorney and now as a court official, it's always been geared towards public service. I've never had an interest in doing private practice, anything like that. It's not like I was waiting for a calling. I wasn't waiting for a message to be the right time. That's who I am. That's who I want to be. I didn't go to law school for the money. Otherwise, I would have gone into private practice, something like that. It's been about service. When I was in law school, I did an internship with public defender's office down in Cook County. Yeah, craziness down there. Mm-hmm. But do a lot of good work, you know, and you help a lot of people. Then I also did an internship with a medical malpractice firm. They did amazing work too. And, you know, whether you're representing doctors who are being sued, or if you're representing people who have been injured and are trying to get, you know, some just compensation for that or some sort of redress, they do good work too. But I was like, you know what, this really isn't for me. And then I ended law school doing an internship with the state's attorney's office, so the prosecutors down there in Cook County. So I was back in the same building I was earlier, but now I was working on the other side. And I was working with a unit that did a lot of domestic violence cases and whatnot. And really getting an understanding of the impact you can have on people's lives by doing that kind of work. Like, yeah, you're doing work, you know, and you're in court, but when you see those cases resolve and you see, like, the gratitude or some of the relief that you are able to afford some of those people by doing that, like, that, okay, this is it, you know, like, this is how I do that. This is how I incorporate who I am into what I do. So when I got done with law school, you know, come back home, get licensed up here, and reach out and try to start doing that type of work. And that's exactly what I did. I actually, you know, nobody was hiring at the time because it was an economic downturn, but still knocking on doors more or less, or, you know, whatever added you want to give to it. I met with the Kenosha DA's office. They didn't have a job at the time, but I was like, I want to come work for you. Okay, well, we'll come see. We'll see what we can do, and we'll let you know. Didn't hear from them for a while. And I was like, all right, well, what's the next closest place? Racine. Call them up. And I met with the DA and the deputy DA, and they're like, we're not hiring. Why are we meeting with you? I want to come work for you. I'll work for free. And soon enough, you'll start to pay me. Or hopefully you will. Like, at least I hope I can prove myself. And they were like, all right. And in a couple of weeks, they found a way to start paying me some money.
Oh, wow.
It was just a little bit, and it was part-time. I was essentially working full-time, but they were paying me part-time. I was like, okay, that's fine. Mm-hmm. And then another couple months after that, they got me on a full-time salary. Shortly after that, I was a full-time assistant district attorney, and I was in. And I was like, I'm not going to leave you all. Like, you took a chance on me. You rewarded me, so I'm going to stay faithful to you. Mm-hmm. So I stayed there for 7.5 years. Mm-hmm. And I did everything there. You know, you start off in misdemeanor court doing simple drunk driving offenses, domestic abuse, battery, stuff like that. And within a couple of years, I was in felony court doing a felony caseload, and I took over somebody who retired, somebody who had been there for well over 30 years, caseload specializing in white collar crime financial crimes and stuff like that. Did a host of other things too, like robberies, burglaries, and stuff like that, but really the main concentration was the white collar stuff, which is something that a lot of people don't like to touch, especially in criminal court, because it's not necessarily as sexy as, you know, there was some crime and there's some video of it and we have these pictures and this and that.
Right.
It's this white collar stuff, and it's like, all right, there's a bunch of bank records and there's maybe a photo of this guy at the bank making a withdrawal, and like, that's not too exciting, but it's creates so much intricacy that you have to put together, and it's like putting a puzzle together. And you do it all from the back end, so before you even charge, a lot of times you're able to meet with the victims, you sit down with these people, whether they're business owners, a lot of small business owners who end up getting scammed out of money by employees, things like that. And you put together all these records, and you put together transaction histories, and whether it be withdrawals or deposits, to build this whole case. And then once you charge it, it's already pretty much a done deal. You're able to present that and charge it, and we have all of this all put together. So it's not one of those things where it's as reactionary, where say there's a shooting, then you go out and arrest somebody, and then you kind of piece it all together.
Right.
You know, I mean, there was a lot of cases like that I was on, but the focus was that white collar stuff. And by the time I left, I was the go-to person in the county for all the law enforcement agencies if they had an issue with a white collar crime case. All the investigators from each of the departments, they worked directly with me, and I was the go-to person. All right, let's figure this out. What do we need to do? What do we need to subpoena? Is it, you know, are we getting into IP addresses and, you know, all the emerging technology with phones and triangulating where people were and see they access this and do those types of things, which can be pretty exciting. I mean, it's not CSI, we're on TV and pull over the screen and right. do that. But, you know, if you look and you're able to see all of a sudden where these towers ping off of somebody's cell phone and be like, oh, this person was in this area at this time period, and you're able to piece these things together, like, that's pretty cool. And then when you're able to present it all and charge it, it's like, all right, so let's talk about how we're going to resolve this and get this done. So that was a lot of fun. And then in 2016, the position came up for court commissioner out in Walworth County. I didn't know anybody out there, but you know, a lot of the judges and the other people in Racine supported me, and Walworth County took a chance on me the same way Racine did, and it's been great. My roles and duties have expanded a lot since 2016, since being out there. I know I was almost late coming here because I was in court till the end of the day, because that's just kind of how it goes. But in Walworth County, I hear every type of case pretty much, and I hear it all the time. So judges, I know you've heard this, and I'm sure a lot of the viewers have too. In all of the counties in the district, so Racine, Kenosha, and Walworth, the judges rotate every 2 years what type of cases they hear. So you really just kind of hone in and specialize, and like, that's what you do, and that's what you get reacquainted with, and that's all you hear, and it becomes kind of like clockwork. I don't really have that advantage, because Mondays I'm doing every injunction hearing, everybody who wants a restraining order, those all come before me. I hear all of those. Monday afternoons, I'm doing all felony prelim cases, so we're doing criminal court. Tuesdays, I run my own criminal traffic court, so all the people who are operating while suspended or operating without a license or operating without an ignition interlock device, those cases all come before me, and I run that court until we can get to a point where, all right, do you have to enter a plea and be sentenced on a criminal charge, or can we figure out a way to do this with just getting a ticket? Tuesday afternoons, I'm in all juvenile court. whether it be children who are in need of protection or services, or delinquency cases. All of those come before me. All of those people see me probably at least a half dozen times before they even see a judge. So they're appearing before me. You know, Wednesdays, traffic court for tickets and whatnot. Do that all afternoon. In the mornings, I'm also involved in treatment court too. So we have that every week. Thursdays, small claims court. I run all of small claims court. So if you have a small claims case out in Walworth County, you're gonna see me at least a few times. Mm-hmm. We're probably gonna have a trial. So I hear all of that all day long on Thursday. Fridays, child support contempt. So all of those cases where people haven't been paying their child support, things like that, and somebody's upset or wants to figure out what's going on, I do those cases Friday morning. And Friday afternoon, more felony prelims. So I'm doing it all.
Yeah, it's a busy week.
I'm doing it all, and you know, it's great though too, because you know, it's always something different, and there's never any type of monotony to it. And it's, you know, I'm constantly learning. You know, I came from being a prosecutor, and that's really all I did for that period of time. But then being out here now since 2016 and being on the bench and hearing all those things for so long, like, number one, it takes a while to really get a firm grasp on all that stuff. But after a while, you get better at it, you get more comfortable with it, and you can really have an impact, and it's really quite rewarding. So that's what I've been doing, and I just want to be able to take that home now. So yeah.
Man, that's awesome. Yeah, and it seems like you, it's giving you a lot of experience dealing with a lot of the different types of cases that if you do end up on the bench, that you'll end up be dealing with anyways. And
right.
Like you say, like, it takes a little time to get adjusted and used to dealing with that. So having kind of that experience beforehand, I imagine would call for a smoother transition for people that maybe
right.
didn't have that experience.
Right. Right. And it's not just something that you could have, well, I did that, you know, 10 years ago, or I did a couple of cases like that once. Like, it's different too when you're just showing up in court and as a party or as an attorney, as compared to being the court official and the one running the show. Like, that's a huge difference. That's a huge difference I learned once I became a court official, was that when you're the one running the show, you have to be on top of everybody, everything. And you have to be ready to catch people's mistakes. Because it's easy when you go in and, you know, you're the prosecutor, you're the public defender, you're a private attorney. You go in and, well, ultimately the judge has to catch that. You know, you hope they do, because they're the ones presiding over it. But then when you are the one presiding over it, you're the one responsible now. So you have to know these things, and you have to stay on top, and you got to be focused, and you got to be on your A game. And it's, you know, I've been able to sharpen those skills and cut my teeth on it, if you will, for quite some time. So I'm certainly ready to take that next step.
That's so awesome. And you mentioned, like, doing a lot of things in the community as well. I believe you're involved, I forget the exact name of the organization or whatnot, but it's something involved with trafficking, right?
Oh, the anti-human trafficking
right,
group.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, I try to, wherever I'm at, you know, when I was in Racine, I was involved with more things in Racine, because that's where I'm at, and that's where I'm working, and if I can incorporate some of that, then that's great. You know, I was a board member of Focus on Community in Racine, which is a nonprofit organization that works on education for the youth for substance abuse and other issues. And so I got involved with that. You know, I was also on the, you know, Traffic Safety Commission out in Racine, because it was part and parcel to what I was doing. And if I'm able to parlay those things together and have more of an impact, then I'm all for it. Out in Walworth County, you know, I talked briefly about it being part of the treatment courts, which is huge. You know, it's huge for a lot of reasons, but I've been involved in that since 2016. And then, you know, more recently been able to get involved with the anti-human trafficking group, which is really a lot about, you know, a lot of education and making resources known to people. Because no matter what community you're in, there are always people who are unaware of what resources are available to them. And that just becomes so key. It's, you know, empowerment through education. You know, that is the name of the game. And if you can do that, if you can get that out, you know, another organization, the Walworth Drug and Alcohol Coalition. Again, it's more education, and it's more about, you know, making sure people know that they have those resources that are out there, so you don't have to struggle on your own. You know, and there's a lot of AODA and mental health issues that I think we're learning more as a society, how much that plays an impact on people's lives, certainly in the courts. There's so many people in the courts who are impacted by that, and that has an effect on why they're there. And if we can properly address that and give more resources to that and give people direction to that, everybody wins. Everybody does. Because the community wants to see those people better. Those people want to be better. And everybody gains from that. That's a net win-win. So why wouldn't you push those things, and why wouldn't you want to be a part of those things?
Definitely. Yeah, I definitely agree. And that seems to be, you know, an easy step that we can take, you know, in just providing the information. That's why I do what I do, you know.
Right.
Information is key. And as long as it's available and people know that the resources are available and we're able to, you know, continue to shine lights on situations that maybe people don't necessarily think of, or they think there's nowhere to turn, you know?
Right. Like, where do I go? What do I do? Mm-hmm. You know, there's, I have a friend in Kenosha who's been working on putting together something like that, a resource, it's kind of like a resource center for people who need help, mm-hmm. people who are struggling for whatever the reason may be. You know, I mean, a lot of people are struggling right now, you know, since March of 2020, it's gotten way worse for everybody. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of things that have happened in Kenosha have kind of shed a light on that. Mm-hmm. And I think we're kind of having a, I don't want to call it a reckoning, but an unveiling of some of that to everybody. So, and we all need to get on the same page here. Mm-hmm. Because again, this is, community wins, everybody wins. And we all pick each other up, mm-hmm. then we're all for the better. You know what I mean? You know, being a Kenosha guy a long time, you know, you want to see the community do well.
Right.
You want to see everybody picked up. And if we're all in this together, that's your best recipe for success. So
most definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just in continuing to just build community, and having conversations and reaching out to people if you can, you know, that's definitely, I definitely love that.
You say conversations. There was an event, was it just last Friday? Mm-hmm. Kenosha Conversations. I know Miss Webb, who I met there, mm-hmm. and then some other people put it on over at the Vault.
Mm-hmm.
Great place. Mm-hmm. Host an event. Do whatever you need to do. Mm-hmm. Kenosha Conversations, or Kenosha Talks. I forget exactly the name of it. I apologize. But it was an event about, you know, a lot's happened.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you want to talk about policing issues, you want to talk about relief issues for people, you want to talk about, you know, what happened to all the small businesses downtown, things like that. There's so much that we need to have an open conversation about with people. And I think people want to have those talks, but a lot of times they're scared to. And then there's a lot of people who are caught in their own echo chambers, whether it be on Facebook or whatever the case may be. And, you know, you don't hear everything. So the event was hosted, and it was great because, you know, each table had a different event or a different topic to talk about. Mm-hmm. And it's you sit there and you sit with a group of people, some people you may know, some you don't, mm-hmm. and you have a frank conversation about it, and you explore some of the questions. And just by listening and hearing what other people say, and you pick up on some of their feelings about it, you become so much more aware of it, and you think about things in ways that you didn't think about it before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, my mom, who I'm sure you're listening, Mom, she always said, you know, God gave you, you know, 2 ears and 1 mouth for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
You should be listening twice as much as you're talking.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to listen to people, you know, and it's the same way in court too, you know, and I treat everything the same way there. You have to be able to listen to people, because a lot of times they tell you things even when they're not telling you things,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense.
No, right, yeah.
You know, people come in, they have a certain demeanor, or they're trying to tell you one thing, but you start to pick up,
body
and it's like, all right, I'm getting what the issue is here. I'm understanding you. And it's taking that time to listen. So whether it's one of these great events where we're bringing the community together, or whether we're in court and we're talking about what is going on, why are we here today?
Mm-hmm.
You know, being able to listen is key. It's key to healing the community. it's key to coming together, and it's key to having a successful court. So that's my thought on that.
Yeah, that's awesome. One thing you mentioned was echo chambers, right? People kind of get, you know, it's easy to kind of fall into, you know, your group or down a rabbit hole of your ideologies or whatever and get stuck down there. One thing that I noticed, just, you know, doing like some research, everything about your campaign seems to just be strictly just, it appears that you know what you're running for, right? It's a nonpartisan position. You're
right
there to focus on the law as it is. Your opinion, I mean, in a way it matters, but generally it doesn't really matter. The law is what it is, and
right,
it's your job to interpret the law.
Right.
And just by kind of just the research that I did, it seems like you're well aware of that. It's just cut and dry. This is what I've done, you know. This is what I bring to the table. And it's nothing really about any of the outside stuff that kind of sometimes gets brought into elections and stuff
right
like that. What's your thoughts on just the position itself, you know, how people approach these types of elections or this position in general?
I get, you know, you talk about that and how politics can sometimes be brought into that. I don't know if I was just extremely naive or if maybe a lot of other people are too, but when I started as a prosecutor, I didn't even know my boss was, that he had run as either, you know, a Democrat or a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here to do a certain job, and being a prosecutor and helping the community and helping families and helping victims, that has got nothing to do with political ideology. That just was not even in the ballpark or the realm for me. And
mm-hmm.
That's something I've never really been a part of.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been a card-carrying Democrat or a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think both people who are heavily involved in that, their heart is always, I really believe it's in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody at the end of the day wants to see their communities lifted up, and they want to see their communities succeed.
Mm-hmm.
But that's never been part of my identity,
mm-hmm.
and I've never even fathomed why that would come into the courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
For anything, whether it be as a private attorney, whether it be for, you know, whether it be some sort of family matter, or is a prosecutor or a public defender, or as a court official, like, absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see that. I don't see how that funnels into that, or why it should.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully it doesn't. Hopefully it doesn't for anybody, especially for this type of position.
Mm-hmm.
I know, you know, if you follow any of like the bigger state races, you know, like the Supreme Court and whatnot, political parties got behind certain candidates and whatnot. But, you know, at the end of the day, you have to look at that person and their track record and see where their commitments lie, and see what they're about as far as people and as far as judicial officials, and make the decision based off of that. It certainly shouldn't be because somebody is, you know, backed by one party or supported by somebody who's tied to one party or another. And, you know, for the people who get endorsements or something like that from somebody who might have an R next to their name, or somebody who might have a D next to their name, if they're endorsing them because it's the person who they are, then great. And, I mean, if not, you know, sure, it's worth looking at why is that person supporting them, and maybe kind of trying to figure some of that out. But at the end of the day, you know, you got to look at the person for who they are. And if they're a person who's fit for it and who's qualified for it, then that's what matters. So, and that's why I'm running, and I think I'm fit for it, and I think I'm qualified for it. So that's me.
Man, that's awesome. Jared, I want to give you some time to just, anything that you want to bring up. I don't feel like we missed much, but I mean, I'm sure there's things that you may want people to know about. If you have any like events or anything, of course, like we want to make sure we plug your site so people can reach out if they want to donate, if they want to get yard signs, stuff like that.
Right,
so,
right. My MySpace is, no. No, me and Tom aren't friends like that. But no, but as far as touching on some other, just kind of briefly, you know, I know kind of a popular issue or a topic is, you know, talking about equal access or fair access to the courts and things like that. And, you know, I think a lot of that is, a lot of people can talk about that. And you talk about, I think that's a good idea, you know, and I want to be open, or I always want to be available. But the question is, what have you done? Either as an attorney, as a public official, as a state official, as a judge, as a court official, really, what have you done, you know, to do that, to show that? Because it's words are easy. Actions are a lot harder. And I've done that, you know. When I came out to Walworth County, you know, right away, it's not like I'm coming out there and we got to make these changes, we got to do this. I'm humble enough to know that I don't know the answer to a whole lot of things, you know, and I'm far from always right. You can ask my wife. But if you learn and you listen, you can figure out ways to improve. You should constantly be trying to improve. You constantly should be trying to learn and constantly trying to improve. If you're not, you're doing something wrong. One of the phrases I hate hearing and just kind of cringe at is, well, that's the way we've always done it. That is not a good reason to keep doing things. Right. That's never a good reason to keep doing things. Right. Let's examine this. Let's check this out. And I've been able to do that. They've given me the leeway and the responsibility to be like, all right, if you figured out a way to do X, Y, and Z better, then let's do that. You know, we figured out a way to change that. So that way, instead of people having just to come in to say, I want to contest this and have a trial, all you got to do is send in a piece of paper or make a phone call and say, I want to contest this. We'll get your phone number. We will call you. And I'm going to have a conversation with you to figure out, do you really want to contest this? Or do you just want to try to get a deal and get your speeding ticket knocked down? Or if you do want a trial, all right, what kind of trial do you want? Here's the differences between the two. So let's think about this. Let me know what you want to do. Oh, wow. So we have those conversations with people without them having to come into court, you know? Small claims, we completely changed and revamped how we did that. After my first 6 months to a year there, I was like, there's got to be a better way to do this. We're calling in 70 cases all on an 8:30 call, and all of these people are coming in, and you have to wait. Most of them don't even see a court official. You see somebody else who kind of herds you somewhere else, and then you might be able to see a court official, but it'll take a couple hours. That doesn't sound good. So now you've just wasted at least half your day to say, I want to contest this, and now you got to come back for a trial? No, we'll change that. So now we have staggered every hour. We have a set number of cases that we'll have. And right now we're doing it by Zoom too, so it's even better. So, you know, you don't even have to come in, but you can pop in on Zoom. We'll call your case. You're not waiting all day, and you're going to talk to a court official right away. And we're going to get this figured out. Are you contesting this? What's going on? What's the issue here? I'm contesting it. Oh, I am. But I'm contesting it because I can't pay. Well, those are two different things. Let's get this figured out. So I'm able to take the time and talk to all these people and get some of these issues figured out without putting a huge stopgag in the rest of the day. So we're able to hear this and we're able to do this stuff and effectively talk to people and communicate with people without ignoring them and without taking away their whole day. So that really means a lot to me, because we're able to do this because, you know, treat others as you want to be treated.
Right.
That's the mantra. That's the mantra growing up in grade school and going to church on Sundays. And that's the mantra that comes with me to the courtroom too. You treat everybody the way you want to be treated. And for a lot of these people, they just need to be heard. I don't know how many trials I've had in small claims court where the person loses, and I tell them that, I understand why you're upset, but there's no remedy in the law here for you. So you're not going to get a judgment. You know, you're not going to prevail here. And even though they lost, they're okay. Because you know why? They got to come into court. They got to express some things. They got to vent a little bit. And now it's like, okay, all right, I get it. And at least I was heard. And the court official heard me, and he was respectful to me. And, you know, sometimes, yeah, they walk out of the court cursing my name as mumbling under their breath. That happens. You know, you can't make everybody happy. That's not the idea. But you know what? A lot of people are okay with that. A lot of people are like, all right, good. And we do traffic court the same way with my criminal traffic court. These are people who have been charged criminally because they don't have a license. It's crazy when you think about it. And I mean, for somebody who's driving on a revoked license, the max penalty is a year in jail.
Oh, wow.
You don't get that much necessarily for a third drunk driving offense. Mm. But if you're driving without a license and your license is revoked because you had a prior drunk driving, your max penalty is potentially a year in jail.
Oh, wow.
That's crazy. You know, if you think about it, you compare it, it's like, all right, so let's, instead of trying to filter all these people and just hear them and get them out because the calendars are too big, let's create a special calendar for it. And that's what the judges did, and they gave that to me. So that's what I hear every Tuesday. People are just trying to get a license. Okay, let's have this conversation. What do you need to do to get a license? All right, have a conversation with these people every week. Okay, so what have you done? What have you done so far? Did you call the DMV? You have to call them. They will walk you through this process of what you need to do. All right, I have these fines to pay with these different jurisdictions. All right, and money's tight. Of course it is. You know, it's tight for everybody. But if you call them, you get on a payment plan. You get on a payment plan, then you'll be eligible to get your license. Oh, okay. And all of a sudden, you spend a little time with these people. You give them a couple of hearings. You give them some extra time and attention. Now they're that much closer to getting a license. And for so many people, you need a license. This, you live in Wisconsin, pretty much anywhere. Unless you're in Milwaukee or Madison, you need a driver's license. You need to get around. You need to work. You need to get to the grocery store. You need to get to Walgreens or see your mom on Sunday. Like, you need to get around. So to empower the people to be able to get a license, not only to help with the case, help resolve the case that way, but now your quality of life is getting better. Because now you don't have to worry about every time I get in the car, am I going to get pulled over? Like, what else is going to cascade from this? More fines. Maybe they're going to try to send me to jail. Maybe I'm going to get picked up. Like, do I have my kid with me? Like, I got to worry about that. Like, let's take all that stress and anxiety away. Let's work on getting you your license. And that's what I do. I don't know how many times, you know, I take detailed notes on everybody. So I know when we come back to court, I'll look and see, all right, Heather, we were here last in November, and I know we were here in October too, and you were working on getting your assessment, but you need to get that money together. Where do things stand? Did you get it scheduled? And if you did, is it done yet? And a lot of times they're like, oh, wow. Oh, he remembers. Yeah, oh, I remember. So don't tell me you're working on doing that, because that's what you told me two times ago.
Right.
So I'm like, they appreciate it. Mm-hmm. And you know, and sometimes they'll come back and I'll be like, all right, do you have it?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be like, I got my license. And they're so happy. And it's like, yes. You know, it's like, you know, a lot of these are like Zoom or something like that. When I give these people a high five, it's like, yes. And they're so relieved. And they actually have somebody to kind of celebrate with the fact that, I got a license now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, to a lot of people, like, you know, I've had my license since I was 16, so I've never lost my license, I've always had it. So, but for so many people, like, to be able to get that back, like, ah, it's so empowering. And if we can do that, and like, that's what it's all about. And being able to do those types of things and being able to make that kind of impact, small or big, you know, and just at the end of the day, like I said, it's treating people like how you want to be treated. And if you can do that, then you're going to be in a good position and everybody else is too. As far as, you know, just wrap things up, I know I kind of went off on a long tangent.
Oh,
sorry about
that. No. It's perfectly okay. And, like, not to cut you off,
yeah.
But you're mentioning things like, you know, people being able to send in a letter or call in and you calling them back. And it seems like it's really fine-tuning the process, right? And it's making things not only better for them, but making the court more efficient as well, you know,
right.
Where you're not necessarily wasting their time or wasting your time, you know, taking up these large gaps of time to do something where it's like, well, you actually need to leave and come back with, you know, with the
right.
proper information or forms or whatever.
Right. It might be. Right. Yeah. People come all the time. Oh, I was supposed to do that. Yeah. All right. But we've created some forms that are actually designed to deal with this problem because it happens all the time. We got a whole booklet on how to do this. Stop over down the hall at the clerk of court's office. We have that paperwork for you. You know, so many people, like with evictions right now, it's because there's the CDC moratorium on evictions. But what does that mean? People come to court and be like, judge or commissioner, they can't evict me. There's a moratorium on evictions. Doesn't work that way. There's a form you got. There's a declaration you have to fill out. You have to submit it to the landlord. You have to check all these boxes and do these things. They don't know that. And now we're at the day of, we're here for the eviction. And if you don't have a valid defense, the court's obligated to grant that. So what do? We have that form there for them. Here, we'll pause this case. Take a time out, grab a pen, fill it out, and then let's see where we're at. Yeah. And you're not giving legal advice, because, you know, as a court official, you know, I'm bound by the same rules that the judges are. Mm-hmm. I have been for the last 5 years. You know, you're not giving legal advice, but providing forms to people are being like, well, we can't do this because of this. Yeah. That's not legal advice. That's trying to level the playing field. Mm-hmm. And that's really what it's about, because then you're getting to a proper result. Mm-hmm. Like, sure, it would be, under the law, it would be correct to tell that person, you didn't do this, this eviction is granted, see you later.
Right.
But is that getting us where we want to be?
Right. Is that really the right thing?
It's not. Right. And if we can do that in a way that's still, you're still operating within the law, because that's what you're supposed to do. Mm. But we're leveling things a bit here. Mm. And giving people, you know, a voice and an ability to be heard that they otherwise wouldn't have. And that's huge. That's huge. You have the power to do that. Use it.
Right.
You know, and that's part of what you're doing. That's part of what I've been doing. And I just, like I said, I want to do that back here. You know, Racine gave me a chance. I impacted that community and what I did there. Mm. Walworth County gave me a chance. I impacted that community and what I did there. Mm. Now I'm looking to take that ability to impact back home, to my backyard, to my home, and do that here. Mm. I believe I have the right experience. I believe I have the right mindset for it. And, you know, it's all about giving the right chance. The people of Kenosha deserve the opportunity to make that choice. And hopefully, you know, whether you get your ballot in a month or if, you know, you go down on April 6th, local elections matter. They matter a lot more than people think. You know, all the big attention's on what happens in Washington, but all the fingerprints on everything local is really huge, and it really matters. So hopefully people really take that to heart, do the research, do their homework on people. You know, I am on Facebook, Doug Villo for Judge. Website, same thing, Doug Villo for Judge. All one giant word, DougVilloForJudge.com. Come check us out. We're going to be having a whole lot more information on there about people who are supporting the campaign. If you want to get involved, if you want a yard sign, if you want to host an event, anything about it, if you just want to talk, you want to know more about me, you can do that. Try to be really accessible on there. Email gets an answer right away. DougVilloForJudge@gmail.com. You can find us. We're still working on the MySpace. You know, maybe the Friendster too. No, but you can find us everywhere you need to. And we'd love to talk to you, love to see you, and hopefully you can support us, and we can make this happen.
Man, that's awesome. Jared, I definitely appreciate you coming in. This has been a fantastic conversation. Very educational too. There's a lot of things that I learned. I'm sure they've learned a lot as well. You seem to be a very outstanding citizen of Kenosha, and I wish you the best of luck. In my opinion, branch one is this. It might be the election to watch. There's definitely some strong candidates. All I can say is I've been kind of blown away. So thank you for everything that you do in the community.
Absolutely.
Thank you for, you know, just staying in Kenosha. because, you know, like we said, a lot of people, you know, they like to get away. And just to see someone that has been dedicated to the community, that continues to want to serve the community is amazing. So thank you for that. Everyone out there, please make sure you stop by Jared's website, DougVilloForJudge.com, as well as the Facebook page and the MySpace, DougVilloForJudge, there as well. Reach out, like you said, if you have any questions, want to host an event, if you want to get a yard sign, whatever it may be, reach out to him. Get all of the information that you can. Make sure that you play this interview back. Listen to everything. Make sure that when it comes down to casting your ballot, that you are of sound mind and can make that decision with all of the facts that have been available to you. All right. So thank you all for tuning in. This has been amazing. I appreciate you again, Jared, for stopping by. Again, Doug Villo for judge.com if you want any more information. I've been your host, Corey Elijah. If you want to like the page here as well, I definitely would appreciate that. But until next time, we will catch you guys later. Bye.